Our monthly theme is identity. And last week and next week, we're going to be talking about our shared identity as Unitarian Universalist in this congregation and what it is and what it means. But today, as we approach Valentine's Day, I'm speaking on love and intimate partnerships and how our individual identities affect who we choose as intimate partners. And our identities also play a big role in how those intimate relationships go. And when I speak of our individual identities, I'm speaking of our personally deepest held values and beliefs, and also our personal experiences and histories. Our individual identities reflect who we truly are in the same way that our congregational identity reflects who we are as a gathered community. My message this morning is based on a book titled Getting the Love You Want by Harville Hendricks, a therapist who, with his wife, Helen LaKelly Hunt, spent their lifetime specializing in couples' relationships. Now, I have been married and divorced twice, so I am definitely an expert on partnerships that don't work out. And I discovered this book near the end of my first marriage about 25 years ago, and I picked it up on a whim. At that time, the book had one of those big starbursts on the cover saying, "As seen on Oprah," which was not an enticement for me. I am not big on self-help books in general. But I found the title to be compelling. I was in an unsatisfying and painful marriage, so the thought of getting the love I wanted sounded really appealing. And it's important to remember before I go on that to be fully present in intimate partnerships, to devote ourselves to them with the best of intentions, is truly a spiritual calling, a spiritual practice. In these relationships, as in any other, we are called to be mindful of what is moral, what is ethical, and what is compassionate in our relationships. We are as called to respect the inherent worth and dignity of our partners as we are of anyone else. We are called to be in right relationship. So as I read Getting the Love You Want, the book really seemed to touch a chord with me of truth. You know, sometimes you read stuff and you go, eh. And then other times you read something and you go, whoa, I think that's really getting to the truth. The book spoke to me intellectually, emotionally, and years later, as I have reviewed it, spiritually. Hendricks addresses some really important questions. Why are we attracted to the people that we are? Once we form a relationship with one of these people, why and how can the relationship go so wrong? And what can be done about that? Hendricks addresses these questions in terms of the human brain, of human development, and the relationships and experiences that people have in childhood with the folks who raised them. One aspect of the book that I liked, and it is also very well written and interesting, not kind of academic at all, but one aspect of the book I found most endearing and comforting the first time I read it is that Hendricks does not spare himself. His greatest motivation for specializing in helping couples was the pain and grief and confusion he felt over the end of his own first marriage. After speaking a bit how, as he was going through his graduate training in marriage counseling, he realized there was really no comprehensive theory to explain the complexity of these partnerships, Hendricks writes, "In 1967, my confusion about the psychology of love relationships was compounded when I began to have problems with my own marriage. My wife and I were deeply committed to our relationship and had two young children, so we gave our marriage 8 years of intensive examination, working with numerous therapists. Nothing seemed to help, and in 1975, we decided to divorce. As I sat in the divorce court, waiting my turn to see the judge, I felt like a double failure. A failure as a husband and as a therapist. That very afternoon, I was scheduled to teach a course on marriage and the family, and the next day, as usual, I had several couples to counsel. Despite my professional training, I felt just as confused and defeated as the other men and women who were sitting beside me in court, waiting for their names to be called. So Hendricks starts off with looking at current theories of attraction from a little while back. He looked around to see, well, why do people say we are attracted to some people and not others? He looked at several popular ideas about attraction. I mean popular in the scientific sense. These were ideas that were current as scientifically sound. And he thought that they fell short in several ways. For one thing, they didn't account for the incredible intensity of romantic love that Hendricks had observed and experienced. And the theories did not account for three other qualities that Hendricks had seen over and over in the couples he counseled. And these three things were the intense pain that people felt at the end of relationships. And also, if attraction worked, as suggested by these experts, then most people would have the opportunity to be attracted to hundreds of people in their lifetimes. But most of us are not. We are attracted deeply only to a few. And the third thing he noticed that these ideas didn't account for is that the few individuals that people are attracted to tend to resemble one another quite closely. Regarding this last idea, that the folks we're attracted to do tend to resemble one another, Hendricks writes, "One night in a group therapy session, we were listening to a man who was 3 months into his second marriage. When his first marriage broke up, he had vowed to the group that he would never be involved with a woman like his first wife. He thought she was mean, grasping, and selfish. Yet he confessed during the session that the day before he had heard the voice of his ex-wife coming from the lips of his new partner. With a sense of panic, he realized that the two women had nearly identical personalities. It appears that each one of us is searching somewhat compulsively for a mate with a very particular set of positive and negative personality traits." So as Hendricks lays out in the first part of the book, and I'm just going to cut right to the chase, we are attracted to and choose our partners for two basic reasons. One is that our chosen partners compensate for the positive parts of our being that were cut off in childhood. And number two, our chosen partners have both the positive and negative qualities of the people who raised us, whether they were parents or other people. And here's the real kicker. It is the negative qualities shared with the people who raised us that are more compelling in these attractions, not their positive traits. So we're mostly looking for a repeat of the negative traits of those who raised us. And let me back up a bit and see how he came to those ideas. First, Hendricks reminds us that we all have memories of every person, event, and experience we've ever had. And these memories exist in both our conscious and unconscious minds. Our unconscious minds hold the memories differently. There, the memories are kept in broad categories having to do with self-preservation. Categories of fight with, submit to, run away from, nurture, or have sex with. That is how they're categorized. In our conscious minds, we also have access to the memories, but fewer of them, as our conscious minds don't begin so young and don't keep everything in the same way. And in our conscious minds, we've analyzed and gone over and worked with those memories over time so that they've actually changed. Hendrix also understands that all of us experience hurt when we are raised from babyhood and childhood, the wounds of not having our needs met perfectly. And I am not speaking of severe trauma, such as sexual or physical abuse, though of course those happen and leave severe damage. I'm speaking more simply of the fact that as we grew up, even our most loving parents or caretakers with the best intentions could not know everything we needed and give it to us. They could not affirm us into perfect wholeness because they were not perfect. And the choices they made were affected by their own experiences. We also had wounds inflicted on us by the broader society in terms of who we were supposed to be and what kind of behavior was considered acceptable in the time and place we grew up. This is called socialization, and it's necessary so that we can function in society without being shunned or arrested. But society also gave all of us some pretty severe messages, mostly through those who raised us, about what parts of us were not acceptable. So our parents and society pruned us and shaped us. Part of us, good and positive parts, were deemed unacceptable or were unvalued. Emotions, characteristics, behaviors, and appearances. And so most of us, to the extent we could, and this was done unconsciously, we cut those parts of ourselves away. We buried them deeply because we knew they were not okay to those around us. Were you told that little boys don't cry? You learned to suppress those tears and the sadness that went with them, gone from your conscious mind. Little girls aren't supposed to play rough and get dirty. You learn for the sake of approval and love and acceptance to move quietly and keep yourself and your clothes clean. Anger, many of us learned as children that expressing anger was not acceptable in any way, shape, or form, so that anger got buried. Asking questions about religion and faith, not allowed for some of us, so our questing spirits were not allowed to roam and flourish and were denied. We were all pruned as we grew up. We experienced wounds and losses, along with love and affirmation that helped us feel whole. And this is just how we grow up, even in the best, most caring and loving families. And it's all part of the mixed bag of learning how to get along in our families and society. So I said that Hendrix came to believe we choose our partners for two reasons. One, they compensate for the positive parts of our being that were cut off in childhood, as I just described. And two, they have both the positive and negative qualities of the people who raised us, especially the negative traits. So why in the world would we be more likely to people with some of the most negative traits of our parents? Here it is. How our primitive unconscious brain, which focuses mostly on self-preservation, is trying to recreate the environment of our childhood with that attraction. And the reason the primitive unconscious brain is trying to resurrect the past is because of a compelling need to heal those childhood wounds, a compelling need to be healed. The ultimate reason you fall in love with your mate, Hendrix suggests, is not that your mate is young and attractive, or is the alpha male or the alpha female, or is kind to you. You fell in love because your unconscious mind had your partner confused with your parents. Your subconscious brain believed that it had finally found the ideal candidate to make up for those wounds you experienced in childhood. So that bigger attraction to people with the negative traits of our parents is not negative in its purpose. It's not because we hate ourselves or desire to suffer. The purpose is to live those negative traits again and have it turn out better, to fix it this time around. And of course, we are also attracted to people with the positive traits of those who raised us. Just most of us, not so much, because we are behaving unconsciously. And when those just right negative and positive traits are combined in a person who also expresses those positive parts of ourselves that we cut away due to our upbringing, a person who brings those parts back to life for us, that is romance magic. That's when we are head over heels on cloud nine in nirvana, whatever you want to call it. What a great feeling it is, that incredible, powerful rush of romantic love. And because for each one of us, that perfect combination of attractive traits and characteristics is pretty complex, our matches are not found on every block. We are very, very selective. Our unconscious mind knows exactly what it's looking for to be healed and to give expression to the parts of us we were told were not okay. So when we meet these folks, however close they are to what we're subconsciously looking for, our recognition of them, also at the unconscious level, is powerful. Consciously, we just feel that strong pull of attraction. And all of this, there's nothing bad about it. It's happening out of the realm of our consciousness, and it is an opportunity for us to do a lot of healing and growing. And when people are good matches for each other, the beautiful healing, growth, and development can be lifelong and wonderful. Our good partnerships really are a way to regain some of the wholeness most of us lost through growing up. The problem comes because for most of us, these motivations and drives for completion and wholeness remain largely unconscious. So our cloud nine nirvana experience usually doesn't last too long. It can't. The change often takes place when some kind of exclusive commitment is made to one another, because that's when our expectations for the partnership really kick into play. And a lot of our expectations are at that unconscious level too, but they operate powerfully. And the most important of these unconscious expectations is that our partners are going to do it all. Satisfy unmet childhood needs, complement and complete the lost parts of us, nurture us in a consistent and loving way, and be eternally available emotionally, intellectually, and sexually. And of course, that's not possible. That's not what either partner agreed to either. Neither of my husbands married me so that I could work out the pain of my upbringing with them. That was not in the contract. They didn't sign on for that, and neither did I. And this kind of the ultimate meeting of our needs also is not possible because we can't do and be that for one another. And especially we can't if our own motives and expectations are deeply hidden from us. Because we are not mind readers, right? We can't even read our own minds, let alone someone else's. So what happens then when the love grows less and we come down off the high? Many partnerships, and not all go through this. There are some lucky folks who have that powerful attraction and their partnerships just, they get through it in growing and nurturing and taking care of one another, and it's beautiful. But when you look at our divorce rate and separation rate, it's pretty clear that is not necessarily the norm. So when that love seems to grow less, what is it that happens? Hendricks suggests we enter what's called the power struggle. As we continue to interact with our partner more intensely and frequently over time, we realize at the unconscious level that our needs for wholeness and completion are not being met and aren't going to be, because by golly, that other person expects us to do stuff too. So people can begin to feel confused, angry, anxious, depressed, and unloved. This actually happened to Harville in his first marriage on his freaking honeymoon. He had like this real moment, and then he just shut it right down. In fact, he did not remember that moment for years. Looked at his wife and saw some kind of posture in her that brought him despair when they were out on the beach one day. So when that happens, we wonder who could be to blame. Well, certainly not me, because I haven't changed. I'm the same person I always was, so it must be you. I'm laughing, but whoa. So first comes that shock, the moment you realize, at some level, this is not the person I thought was my partner. The healing is not going to happen. The loneliness and pains of my childhood are going to continue. And it may not be that clear and conscious, but that is what it is. And then we think, either my partner has changed drastically or I was deceived about my partner's true nature. And that feels like a dreadful betrayal. That is a lot of pain, and with that pain can come anger and lashing out. We attack, we blame, we're irritable and critical. And if you can stick it out beyond the anger and disappointment stage, you can enter a more calm time, the time of bargaining. If you give me this, I will give you that. But bargaining still doesn't get at the underlying concerns. And sadly, a lot of inadequate therapists, they just want to teach you to bargain better. The final stage of the power struggle is despair, when people give up that hope of finding or regaining happiness or love with their partner. And Hendricks thinks that at this point, about half of folks will end the partnership. Many of those who stay together create a set of parallel lives where they seek to find happiness outside of the relationship, in activities or friendships with other people, or romantic relationships with other people. So they kind of live together separately in their own worlds without a lot of meaningful interactions. Some partners do find, on their own, a way to resolve the power struggle and go on to create a deeply satisfying relationship. As I told you, I've married and divorced twice. I know the pain and despair of the power struggle intimately. I've been through it, not just once. I found Hendricks's book near the end of my first marriage, and it was helpful to me in understanding what had happened in my own life and upbringing. But that was too little too late for that marriage. There was a lot more work I had to do in understanding the pain and despair of why my partnership had failed. Fortunately for me, but not for my second marriage, during that second marriage, I did a lot of work with a very skilled person to understand myself and my way of being in relationship. I did this because I did want to heal myself and not be driven by my unconscious expectations, motivations, and needs to the extent possible. I wanted to be the kind of person I needed to be to get the love I wanted. Now, I didn't get married the first time until I was 30. And my second marriage ended many years ago. Now I'm in my 60s, and statistics tell me it's probably more likely I will be struck by lightning than have a partner again. But that's okay, because I'm finally ready. In my own imperfect way. So the good news is that there is hope for all those in partnership who may be struggling. Even if the relationship has been struggling for years, there is hope. So what do you do to get out of that power struggle and move forward, recapturing the love that really was there? The way that Hendricks describes a partnership that is mutually satisfying and rewarding is that these partnerships are based on a willingness to change and the active participation of your conscious mind. Healing partnerships are conscious as opposed to unconscious. So he sees these conscious partnerships as ones that foster maximum psychological and spiritual growth. They create, this happens by becoming conscious and really cooperating consciously with the fundamental drives of your deepest mind to be safe, to be healed, and to be whole. Those are the drives of your unconscious. He says that in an unconscious partnership, you believe that the way to have a good relationship is to pick the right partner. In a conscious partnership, you realize you have to be the right partner. And the key to consciousness and relationship is self-awareness, knowing your identity, who you really are. And it means taking the time intentionally to learn about yourself, where you came from, and understanding your own struggles. All of these drive how you see the world and how you understand and react to others. Central to this understanding is seeing your partner, if you're in a partnership, as a source of knowledge about you also. There is usually at least a grain of truth, and sometimes a whole bag of grains, in your partner's criticisms of you. By engaging with their view, you can gain a new source of knowledge about yourself. So this book includes many ways to connect with what you most deeply desire in a partnership, as well as ways to understand your own needs and the pain that is driving your behavior, the old stuff. This work that the book sets out for you, literally how to do, what to do, it can be done on your own, for your own growth, or with your partner, and it can be done if you are not partnered, as you prepare yourself for what may come. So Hendricks found that something wonderful happened when couples retreat from the power struggle into a more conscious way of behaving, when they're able to reconnect with that deep and genuine love and attraction that drew them together in the first place. What happens is they are then able to turn their energy away from each other towards all the woundedness that is beyond themselves. They develop a greater concern for the environment, for people in need, for important causes of justice and equity. The capacity to love and heal that is created in the partnership is now available for others and for the world, too. So that is a real spiritual outcome of being in a conscious, intimate partnership. It can also be part of the spiritual outcome of having right relations with each other as a congregation. Individuals struggling with relationship and groups struggling with relationship don't have so much energy to spare for healing the world. So by giving attention and practice to all our relationships, we gain the power and energy to heal the world and to heal it together. So I pray for you and myself that we may all be self-aware and conscious in all our relationships, in our own lives, in this congregation, and beyond. So may it be, blessed be.